deja vu. Rumors China may be buying, and once it's confirmed, the market doesn't seem to care. But today, large soybean purchases are turning some heads. So is the tune and doubts about China living up to its phase one actually changing? I guess we can only hope.
Live from the land of lightning bugs via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Mike Newland, Ag Business Development Director from the Propane Education and Research Council. Then we've got Jason Weller, Vice President of TruTerra LLC. And in the final segment, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drover's steers in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now filling in for Chip Flory from U.S. Farm Report, Tyne Morgan.
Thank you, Davis, so much. I have a quick question,
good
though,
morning.
Before we launch into
right.
our Thursday show.
Yes.
So you come up with unique sayings every day for the show. So do you,
right.
you know, sit down and have like this awesome brainstorming session and then stash it away for weeks? Or is this just fly by the seat of your pants every morning? You're that creative.
I'm going to be honest. I try to keep it very, very fresh. I bring up lightning bugs, and maybe, you know, I saw lightning bugs last night when I was taking my beloved dogs out for their evening. The last visit outside of the day. Right.
Uh-huh.
And maybe many of you have noticed the skies are so clear without the air travel these days. The stars are absolutely phenomenal. It's beautiful out there. And so usually I'm looking up, but last night for the first time, and I'm not saying that they aren't out there before, but I really noticed the lightning bugs in my area here in Northeast Iowa last night. So, yeah, I mean, I try to keep them current, try to stay hip, you know. I figure this is what the kids are talking about, so I might as well talk about it too, right?
The kids at our house are learning some valuable life lessons during COVID. And that
oh,
includes,
is that right?
Uh-huh,
mm-hmm.
that if you catch a lightning bug and you mm-hmm. rub it on your body, you can glow.
Yeah.
So the
oh,
girls
sure.
learned that a couple weeks ago. Valuable life mm-hmm. life lessons that you know, mm-hmm. you could mm-hmm. use for the rest of your life. So.
And these are things you can't learn from a video game. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Ditto. Very true. We don't. They're too young for video games. But anyway. All
okay,
right, Davis, I mentioned it. We had some more impressive buys from China. This time it seems like mm-hmm. the soybean market actually seems to care. But
right.
it's like a broken record because we hope, oh, things are changing. But the tensions seem to still be there with China.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I guess at this point, and maybe I should have advised this, oh, I don't know, like a year ago. Hey, let's really try and remove the emotion from this story. Let's not tie how we feel from day to day about the markets to what goes back and forth between the White House and Beijing, because these folks are not only master negotiators, but also master gamers. Speaking of gaming, and they know how to work the system. China's in buying. They're opportunity buyers. So, of course, they're going to come in and buy a chunk right now. When do you buy stuff? When it's on sale. So, you know, whatever. It's great, though. Love the demand. We'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially on a day like this where the market actually seems to care, unlike Monday.
Yeah, for sure.
But what else is going on with China right now?
Well, speaking of which, after several weeks of back and forth between the U.S. and China, rising tensions over Hong Kong, alleged human rights abuses against ethnic minorities in China, and condemnation over Beijing's designs on the South China Sea, President Trump said yesterday he will not impose further sanctions on Chinese officials as he does not want tensions to escalate further. Now, Trump did leave the door open for sanctions, but said he's ruled out such actions for now. On the economic front, this comes as China emerges as the first nation whose economy has measurably improved since the start of the pandemic. After China's GDP scored a dismal 6.8% contraction in the first quarter, second quarter results topped expectations, reporting growth of 3.2% year-on-year. Retail sales in China do continue to struggle, but industrial production rose 4.8%, leading that recovery. The back and forth is just going to continue. Time.
Yeah, and I talked to a National Cotton Council this morning about, you know, retail sales, not only in China, but here. And, you know, when you think about it, purchases of clothing, you know, with people not going into the office, literally yeah. shut off. And so you think about how that demand, and how that kind of trickles down to demand for people such as cotton farmers. You know, this picture mm-hmm. needs to improve quickly in order for some optimism to come back into some of these markets.
Well, the Renewable Fuels Association said yesterday the U.S. ethanol industry has lost more than $3.4 billion in revenue as a result of the pandemic-related slowdown. RFA urged lawmakers to include financial relief for the biofuels sector in the next relief package being crafted by Congress. The group warned, quote, if additional travel and business restrictions are adopted by states, the losses would be larger and may even surpass the $10 billion estimate from RFA's initial forward-looking analysis that was released in April. Cumulative ethanol production and consumption declines between March and June exceeded 1.3 billion gallons, according to RFA. Those declines meant almost 500 million fewer bushels of corn were used in ethanol production over the same period. It'd be nice to get that demand back.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get it back. And I've seen, you know, I've seen some pictures and videos in like Chicago where actually traffic's starting to pick up. My way into Kansas City this morning, definitely not pre-COVID levels, but I'm noticing more traffic on the road. So it seems like we're moving in that right direction. But, you know, talking to some businesses this morning that say, listen, we'll be working from home the rest of the year. So you just wonder what is the ceiling on it for right now?
Oh, and finally here, the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee has approved by voice vote the Water Resources Development Act of 2020, clearing the path for the measure to move to a full vote on the House floor. The measure would empower the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to conduct studies and water projects and direct policy for civil works. Ag groups, including the American Soybean Association, support the measure. And I just have this from Big Apple Joe. No promises, but we're hoping to get Congressman Sam Graves on next week to talk about that Water Resources Development Act right here on AgriTalk. Tyne.
Yeah, it'll be good to pick his brain, not only on that, but future coronavirus aid and what they're thinking right now in Congress. All right, Davis, thank you so much. Let's switch gears over to Greg Henderson. You heard it. It sounds like we're in a feed yard right now, but we're not. Greg, how are things?
It does. Good morning, Tyne.
Good morning. How are things? Hey. Bustling, busy. It sounds like it from the sound effects.
Yes, things are going well. Although we're getting ready for this extreme heat wave that's going to hit over the weekend, so we're not really looking forward to that.
Yeah, close to 100 degrees. I don't think we've seen any 100 degree days in Kansas City yet this year.
We have not, and actually it's been a couple of years, but what we have seen, Tyne, is some numbers in the cattle on feed report and the data that's showing that maybe we're not getting through this backlog of cattle as quickly as we would like. We saw in June that harvest, packing plants were running at near capacity compared to what they were a year ago, but slaughter in July will be down 0.5%, probably because there's one less slaughter day. And analysts say that leaves the number of cattle on feed 150 days or more at 950,000 head. If that number's correct, that would be 40% more than a year ago.
Wow.
Point being that the backlog that we hope to get through is going to take several months to do so. And even though prices are up a dollar this week or 95 to 96 so far, it looks like we're going to struggle at least through the third quarter getting rid of these cattle and getting them moved for the pipeline.
Well, Greg's also not happy about Burger King's latest advertisement. You can read his story. Burger King tells a Whopper. That's on drovers.com. But when we come back, propane. How are we ensuring there's not a propane shortage again? We'll talk about that when we come back on AgriTalk.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize the National Corn Growers Association for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back on this Thursday. Joining us now, Mike Newland, Ag Business Development Director for the Propane Education and Research Council. Mike, thanks for joining us today on the program. Let's talk about last year. historic Midwest flooding. What type of issues did that create when it comes to propane delivery and propane availability?
Hey, good morning. Appreciate the opportunity. So yeah, as we look back at 2019, and gosh, I'm not sure how many folks really want to do that, but so we had historic weather that really delayed the crop going in the ground across the country. And from that point forward, we were scrambling to kind of play catch up with the crop. So, you know, mid-year, we kind of knew as the propane industry that we were going to see big usage. And that really extended all the way from the eastern Corn Belt all the way up through the upper Midwest. And we just didn't have any pockets really that weren't at or near historic levels of drying. So it did strain the system a little bit. We had a lot of propane in the country at that point in time, but the logistics of moving it and getting it where it needed to be on time did become a challenge in some of those huge draw areas in the upper Midwest. So, you know, we took a lot of time after the year was over and kind of looked to see where we had some opportunities. And I think we've got some good tools for folks that I'd like to talk with you about.
Yeah. So what do you think was the most telling thing that you learned as you looked over and really spent 9 months studying what happened and how you can prevent that in the future?
Well, I think what we did learn, it's a challenge. If we're at extremes all the way across the Corn Belt, the system can absorb extremes in regions. The system last year, I think, had a tough time absorbing the extreme conditions all the way from the eastern Corn Belt all the way through the western Corn Belt in the upper Midwest. And I think that's really where we had some opportunities to learn. And so what we've done, we've actually taken a good look at what we can do as an industry to better prepare ourselves. And I think we've got two fronts, really, that we can do that on. One of them is facing the farmer and working, having the farmer work on prep plans with their local propane marketer. So we've got a tool built for that. It's on our website, propane.com. It's Grain Drying Calculator, and really all it is, it's just a quick calculator that calculates how many gallons of propane it's going to take to dry the crop at each individual farm. It's just a couple quick inputs on acres, expected yield, how many points of moisture you're going to take out of the crop before you put it in the bin. And really, we developed that as a conversation starter. It's not really meant to get down to the last gallon that you need to pre-order, but I think it's a great tool for a farmer and a local propane marketer to just start a conversation. The earlier, the better. And if we can get that first load into the tank next to the grain dryer, I think that's all the better.
You know, when you look at some of the propane issues that we had last year, we know we had a really wet crop a wet crop as well. And that was some of the problem. Are you expecting any crop issues this year as far as that goes?
You know, we're not. We've built some tools, and we continue to watch things. So, I mean, the first thing we look at are acres. So, you know, when USDA came out early with their 97 million corn acres, it grabbed my attention, to be very honest. I thought we were a little high. And then as they backed that down here on the resurvey to 92, you know, I think that's a much more manageable number. It really gives us about the same acres that we dealt with last year. Now, the big difference between last year and this year, the crop went in much better in 2020. We really didn't have any big delayed areas. We had some in the Dakotas, but we're keeping an eye on those. And honestly, they're tracking for the time the crop went in pretty darn well. Quite honestly, we're seeing more areas this year running below average on corn moisture than are running at average. So in the last year, we've developed a tool that we use internally at the Propane Education Research Council, and it's available to propane marketers across the country, that we can view corn moistures across the entire country. So I think that's a big learning and a big tool that we put in place. We found a vendor that was able to do that for us. So we can take the 2020 crop, compare it back to the last 20 years of growing conditions, kind of see where this year compares to those 20 years. And it's a great way to identify any hot spots or large usage areas ahead of time. And I think that's one of the biggest tools for us as an industry that came out of the 2019 season.
Mr. Newland, handsome sidekick here, Davis Michelson. a couple of questions. Can you help me get a sense? I can't really get my head around how popular propane is as a fuel for irrigation pumps. I know that diesel is fairly popular. I would imagine it's the most popular, but are you tracking use for irrigation in the drier parts of the country here?
We track the number of irrigation pivots that are on propane and all other fuels. So I could anecdotally tell you what I think's going on from a usage standpoint. Sure. In various markets, but you know, propane is a fuel that a lot of people don't think about when they're putting out a pivot, and I wish they would. In my opinion, the best fuel to use. One, it burns cleaner than anything else out there, but two, we don't have storage issues. So if you've got a tank sitting next to a pivot and you don't use it for whatever reason in that year, or you've got some in the tank at the end of the year, you don't have any fuel degradation issues as you would with other fuels. So I think it's a perfect fuel for those remote pivots. As you mentioned, diesel does have a nice share. Electric has great share where they have availability to electricity. So we do promote and work with some great engine partners on propane irrigation systems. All that information can be found at propane.com. We've got an irrigation page there. And we do offer some incentives for folks that are looking to switch from a different fuel into a propane irrigation engine. And that incentive comes through the Propane Education Research Council as well.
Terrific. If I can move the clock back just a few years, I believe it was a winter 2013-14, the Cochin pipeline came offline. Prices skyrocketed. Everybody was freaking out. And I talked to a lot of farmers, a ton of farmers, who said, well, by golly, in response to this, I'm going to increase my on-farm storage. I couldn't argue with them. It seemed like a good idea to safeguard your own local supply. Have you necessarily seen on-farm storage increase? Would you recommend that kind of a thing? Where are we at on on-farm storage?
Yeah, I think we've seen it increase over the years as a result of the event that you talked about. You know, and I think it's a great opportunity to look at your local market. Every market's different, and that's what I continue to talk to folks about. You know, we've got product that moves by pipeline. We've got product that moves by truck into certain markets only. So I think it really depends upon the market that you're in, where your supplier and where your marketer is pulling their propane from. And I think that's a great conversation to have, because that is the opportunity for a farmer to control more of their own destiny from a propane supply standpoint, is to have additional storage on the farm.
Because as you mentioned, I mean, the degradation there really isn't a concern. If, let's say, you get an enormous storage tank there, or even a couple, and you wind up with a little bit left over, well, shoot, it's still going to be there the next time you need it, right?
That's exactly correct. From that standpoint, propane's a perfect fuel. It does not have degradation. You don't have to treat it in any manner. Don't have to put any conditioner in it. It's just there, and it's going to be ready for the next time you fire the dryer up, or that irrigation engine that's sitting in the middle of a section. So, it's a perfect fuel for that, and I think for that reason, it's a great opportunity to take a look at maybe expanding storage. It may be the right thing for your farm.
EIA reports increasing stocks in the most recent report, now 7.195 million gallons above a year ago, excuse me. It doesn't seem like we need to be concerned for production at this point in time. Fair statement?
Yeah, I think it is, with a caveat. That's exactly correct. Propane supply is good right now. The one thing I would caution folks and encourage you to get out and talk to your local marketer. With COVID-19, our on-road motor fuel and refining has kind of veered off its typical path, if you will. And I think the opportunity then, you know, we've got propane maybe heavier in some areas, lighter in some areas than you'd normally see. And for that reason, I think it's an always a great time to have that conversation early with your local marketer.
All right. Thanks so much. Well, when we come back, we'll take a look at the markets. Like I said, we had a buy from China. Is that what's moving the markets today? We'll check in with Bro Farmer coming up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And today's expert editor, Brian Grady. Brian, nice to see some movement, some positive movement on the board today. Is it those buys from China building that momentum, or is it something else that the market's watching?
Well, I think the Chinese demand has a lot to do with it. We did have another daily soybean sale to China this morning, and also daily soybean sales to unknown destinations. So that's given the bean market a boost. Corn, we didn't have any daily sales today, but since last Friday, we've had huge sales to China, and they've been shopping around. So that's given us some support. We're also seeing some spreading between the corn market and the wheat market. So wheat's been on fire here recently, especially SRW contracts. They're under pressure today from some profit taking, but also some long wheat, short corn spread unwinding, which, as I mentioned, is helping out the corn market as well.
Yeah, yesterday, some really positive price action in wheat. I know that was on some rumors that China may be shopping around for U.S. wheat. And so today, is there some type of disappointment that we didn't see any confirmation of those sales?
Well, possibly, but we did see China show up as a big buyer in the weekly sales numbers that ended last Thursday. Now, new marketing year high there, and China took 42% of the business. So, you know, they're around, and those rumors yesterday that China shopping probably is going to come to fruition here, and we'll get those results next Thursday.
All right. Livestock seems a little bit more positive over there.
Yeah, very nice move in the cattle market. It had some pressure earlier in the week, but now breaking out to the upside. Strong gains in both live cattle and feeder cattle futures. Also strong gains in the hog market this morning. So one of the best days that we've seen as a whole across the livestock sector.
Brian Grady, Pro Farmer.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Davis.
Yes?
Are you trying to mess with our jive here?
Not at all. I'm trying to enhance it, in fact. Just to give everyone the reassurance that I'm here. I'm here, everyone.
Well, we appreciate you being here on this Thursday. We need to
Did I hypnotize you for a second there? I didn't ask for these powers, Tyne. I'm sorry. Don't look at the watch. See, there she went again.
She looked at the watch.
Definitely looked at the watch. Because I'm in a Farm Journal field day zone. Davis, mm-hmm. crop tour, mm-hmm. real quick before we get into our next interview, crop tour, that's Ooh, yeah? still happening, right?
Yes, it is. I really don't have any details whatsoever on that, except to say that, yes, it is happening. We're taking adequate, perhaps even more than adequate, safety precautions. So it'll be a scaled-down version, and there will be virtual events along the way, and we've got some exciting stuff coming up on the Farm Journal side as well, virtually. So, yes, there will be a crop tour, and we will have those results third week of August, just like every year. And, the folks who are more closely involved in that are putting their plans together and getting it all sorted out. So,
yeah, crop tour, August 17th through the 20th. And right after that, we have Farm Journal Field Days. That is August 25th through the 27th. And then Farm On Benefit Concert, August 27th. All right. Getting mm-hmm. back to our programming, Jason Weller with Truterra. Jason, just give us a background real quick. What is Truterra?
Hey, Tyne. Thank you very much for allowing me to join your program today. Super excited to join you. Truterra is the sustainability business at Land O'Lakes. And for your listeners, Land O'Lakes, of course, know us as a branded food company. But we're also really, it's important to understand, we are a farmer cooperative. We're one of the largest farmer and agricultural retailer cooperatives in the United States. And so Truterra is the sustainability arm of that farmer cooperative system.
Yeah, and a really neat and exciting partnership that was just announced with Lando Lakes and Microsoft. Give us an overview of that partnership and how it will directly, you know, not only impact farmers and ranchers, but all of us in rural America.
It's a really exciting partnership. It's a story of how the world's, I think, highest capacity and best-in-class technology companies, which is Microsoft, joins forces with one of the United States' largest farmer cooperatives that has deep understanding of agriculture and animal production, livestock production, coming together to join forces around technology. So there's three components to this partnership. The first is an ag tech component. It's how do we help transform the data farmers are already creating on their farms through their farm management information systems, through their John Deere information systems and other machinery equipment. How do we repurpose that data to create even more revenue opportunities and higher profit return on investment opportunities for farmers and ranchers? The second component of this is around sustainability. How do we enhance the sustainability tools that Land O'Lakes has, one of which is the Truterra Insights Engine, which is a precision sustainability tool. And Microsoft and the Truterra team are going to join forces to help the farmer identify new conservation opportunities on the farm that will improve their profitability and increase their sustainability. And the third component is around rural communities. And Land O'Lakes and Microsoft have joined forces, and there's a broader American Connection Project with 50 companies, including Land O'Lakes, joining forces to increase rural broadband access, to allow for rural communities, starting with farmers and ranchers, but really the rural fabric, being able to get better access, to improve access to the internet, to increase economic opportunities, learning opportunities, and telemedicine opportunities.
Let's go into the broadband side of it, because I think, you know, right now with a lot of folks working from home, schooling from home, I mean, really broadband has been in the spotlight, including for myself, as when you don't have access to adequate broadband, really is a pain point. So as you move forward, kind of what is the biggest obstacle when it comes to making sure that access to rural broadband is nationwide? What's the biggest challenge?
So we view broadband really as the utility that all Americans should have access to, like we expect to have access to transportation and electricity and to water. Access to the internet really is the lifeblood of the 21st century economy. But it's also, as we've learned, you know, recently with the distance learning schools, as they've had to close previously, you know, in the springtime, and as communities were closing down because of this pandemic, it's really just highlighted this gap that rural communities have faced. And when we hear stories about college students or high school students, grade school students having to do homework or take tests in parking lots of different stores or food retailers because they didn't have access at home to broadband internet, or people having to do banking because they don't have access to the internet, or people having to do appointments, telemedicine appointments by their cell phones in a parking lot somewhere, that to us is just unacceptable. And so what this partnership is about is how do we open up that broadband pipeline so that rural communities, rural businesses can invest in creating jobs and getting access to innovations and bringing their new ideas and products and ultimately accessing the international marketplace. But it's also about families getting access to their doctor, to telemedicine opportunities, or being able to do homework, or to be able to take tests, or access education opportunities. And so we're really excited by this alliance of Microsoft bringing their engineering and software expertise. But for Land O'Lakes, because we're a cooperative system, we have a national network of local farmer cooperatives and agriculture retailers that are opening up locations where they're turning on Wi-Fi access to the public, where the public can then come into their parking lots as a stopgap. But bigger picture is we're this coalition advocating for a very significant public investment, a federal and state investment into increasing broadband access so that beyond just Wi-Fi hotspots, we're really hoping to open up the pipeline for farmers, for rural communities, for households and businesses to access the internet.
Yeah, having those hotspots, that's a really cool thing that Land O'Lakes did. When you look at this partnership, does it just start the conversation, or is there already a plan in place? Is there already a plan created to break through some of that and allow for greater access?
So there is a plan in place. Through this, the Microsoft and Land O'Lakes Alliance and this American Connection Project, we have already been engaging with policymakers in state capitals. We've been talking to a number of governors and getting governors on board and complementing the leadership of those governors in terms of investing in broadband access. But this coalition has also gone to Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and to the administration, is advocating for really robust, significant investments in building this infrastructure for the 21st century. And we're already seeing results. We've seen legislation already introduced into the Congress, which is advocating for very significant federal investments in increasing broadband access in rural America. And so we believe this alliance is already paying off.
Why does it take, someone like a Microsoft and a Land O'Lakes come together to answer this great need that we've been seeing for years now?
I think it's from a Land O'Lakes perspective, is that because we are rural America, I mean, we are a cooperative of cooperatives. There are close to 1,000 agricultural retailer businesses, and many of those are former co-ops that are members of the Land O'Lakes enterprise. So when you think of Land O'Lakes, actually think of rural America, think of farmers, think of local co-ops, because that is Land O'Lakes. And so what's unique here is that the Land O'Lakes leadership and the cooperative system has come together and said, this is a huge gap and a need. And therefore, Land O'Lakes, we need to highlight that need and be advocates for our rural communities, because we are those rural communities. And so I think that's what's unique here, and that it's not just Land O'Lakes, it's also this broader coalition of other companies that are in rural America that understand this crying need and this gap. And I think that's the unique here, is that enough is enough. And I think what we've experienced this year has really highlighted this rural connection gap that we need to really bring resources to bear to solve it.
Yeah. What kind of bar has been set on this? I mean, do you want every single community, every single household to have access to rural broadband? What are the parameters that have been set to say, you know what, this partnership, this was a success?
Our view is yes. I mean, this is really about fundamental utility, fundamental access to the 21st century way we communicate, the way we do business, the way we access learning opportunities, the way we access healthcare opportunities, the way our businesses connect to marketplaces. So in the end, yes, our benchmark is all rural communities should have access to the internet. It's going to take a very significant investment from the public into this public utility. And it's a very significant dollar figure, and that's why the private sector alone should not bear it. This is why rural communities alone cannot bear it. This really needs to be, a national enterprise and a national infrastructure investment.
What's the timeline, Jason?
So we're hopeful. I mean, we've already launched our rural connection project today. It's live. And just Land O'Lakes alone, through our cooperative family of agricultural retailers, we have over 150 locations across multiple states now, where the public can access the internet because of this new effort. But from an investment standpoint, it's really going to take a public investment. And this is where we're hoping for the leadership of the U.S. Congress and the administration to advocate for and get behind this investment. We're very optimistic and appreciative of the good response we've gotten. And we're hopeful that we're going to be seeing investments later this year. And as we look forward to the future year and to 2021, we're very optimistic that we'll see significant investments into this new infrastructure and start to see communities and households get increased access to affordable internet.
Jason, real quick before we have to go, what about affordability? How key is that in this?
It's crucial. I mean, it's one thing to lay the internet pipe, and if in the end the cost of access is still that a family can't afford, we haven't achieved that. So affordability is really crucial. And how do we make this equitable, that whether you're in town, in a suburb, in a small community in rural America, I think affordability really is about equity and access. And that for us, affordability is key.
Jason, exciting initiative, exciting project. I'm excited to see where this goes. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Tyne.
All right, when we come back, a show mom navigating her first show during COVID-19. And that show mom just happens to be one of our own. We'll hear from Jennifer Scheich and her experience next.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
See, my mistake was that I didn't take that first jar as a sampler. And so I started handing it out. Hey, who wants, hey, the cucumbers are from my garden. I made these delicious pickles. Everybody get some. I gave some to my mother-in-law, to friends and everything. Nobody ever has asked me for canned goods ever again since, which maybe is a blessing, but geez, I feel bad. And now I can't bring it up because then they're going to know that I know. Yes, they're going to know that I know how terrible they were.
Okay, just in case our listeners think Davis is crazy, which he is, during the commercial break, we were talking about I started canning pickles this past week because we have so many cucumbers. I canned my first batch. James opened it up and ate an entire jar in like 5 minutes. And I was a little upset because I'm like, hey, we're supposed to live on these during the winter. And he thinks that we're not going to live on them during the winter whatsoever. But anyway, my point is don't open up a jar. I'll put some in the fridge. You can eat on that for a week. And I asked Davis if I was wrong in that. And he told me he was excited. He'll give him one grace jar. And then he went into a story about how he made pickles one time and things went awry.
It sounds like by opening that one jar, he actually opened a can of worms. Would you say?
Oh, well, the next cans, I put jalapenos in every one of the next jars. So we'll see if he thinks the same. Anyway, let's get on with this conversation on this Thursday. Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, how are you? You haven't had time to can because you actually have been busy in the show ring.
There's been no canning here, but we spend a lot of hours out in the barn for sure at our house. The kids got into bed, I think, around 10:30 the other night, and I thought, probably not my best parenting, but the animals were happy, so all's well.
I can relate. And if I had livestock that the girls were showing, I doubt I would be canning, but here we are. All right. So, Jennifer,
yes.
You recently posted an article on Farm Journal's Pork, and it's called A Conflicted Mom's Take on Showing Livestock During COVID. And that's what the title is. But really, as a mom myself, as you know, our listeners who are parents, you can take showing livestock out and put in anything else, like the, you know, a baseball game during COVID, any of those activities. And what you say in this article, we can all relate to. But talk about what was the basis of this article that you wrote? Why did you write it?
Well, I think, you know, as a mom, there's nothing more important to me than taking care of my kids. And so for so long here, we've been sheltering at place. And, you know, we're from Illinois. And so, gosh, we've sheltered at place a lot longer than a lot of people have. And we've tried to follow all the rules and do all the things. But, you know, there's just a point to where you notice changes in your children just from a mental health perspective and yourself. You know, let's be honest, it is hard. I'm a people person and it is really hard to just be in my house all the time, you know, and to not get out and about. And so when we had the opportunity, you know, we showed virtually, which was interesting, a lot of good family bonding time there. But when we had the chance to go out to an actual show, there were a lot of conflicted things in our mind, but if it gave our kids a chance to have something to look forward to, I mean, that show we went to last week has really kept them going and motivated them and brought a spark to their life. And that has a lot of value to me as a mom, but there's a risk to doing anything right now. And so it's been tough to weigh out what the right thing is to do.
Yeah, you know, that is a struggle right now for all of us as parents. So you attended your first show. Jennifer, what type of roller coaster of emotions did you go through in making the decision? Yep, you know what? We are actually going to go show in person right now.
Well, you know, I think once we decided we were going to do it, we just had to, you know, you just kind of have to move forward. But we had, you know, we took our precautions. I mean, we loaded up with Clorox wipes and Lysol and all the things. We've had a lot of conversations with our kids and, you know, they know how serious it is. And but also that we kind of need to live life. And so there's a balance and there's a way that we hope to be in the middle of that. When we were there at the show, I will say that there were several measures in place to promote social distancing and we felt pretty good about it. But there's always those moments where you're like, okay, that interaction was probably a little too close, you know, and you just have to kind of live a little bit, right? And so, you know, as we were there, we felt pretty good. But then when we got back in the truck and started to head home, you know, I just thought, how do you go back to real life? And so I think that's what sparked me to write this more than anything, because there's a lot of people who are going to livestock shows, going to basketball tournaments, going to, you know, games and different activities right now. But I think none of us know how to come back, because there's not really great guidance on that right now.
Right.
And so I think for us, it's been communicating with people where we've been and what we've done, and paying attention to how, you know, when we come home from a show, we're watching how do our pigs feel, but we're also now watching how do we feel. And we're also, you know, just as we sanitize and disinfect anything that our pigs used and everything we took to the show to promote good biosecurity here on our farm, we're doing the same thing with all the stuff that we took. And so I guess we won't know for a couple of weeks if we're going to get sick or not. But, you know, at the end of the day, we feel like it was a good choice for our family. But I also kind of came to the conclusion that what's good for me may not be right for you, and what's right for you may not be right for me. And at the end of the day, I hope we can all just respect each other for trying to make the best choices we can for our group of people that we get to be with day in and day out.
Yeah, that leads to my next question real quick, Jennifer. I mean, do you have any regrets? I mean, I know this was a decision that weighed on you heavily during or before, once you got there and all the extra precautions you had to take, and some of the show organizers, you know, the health department coming out and saying you're not doing enough social distancing, you need to do more, or everyone's going to have to wear masks 24/7 around here. A lot happened then, a lot of stress then. Do you regret going to this show during COVID?
You know, I will say today that I don't, because when I looked around in the ring and saw my kids in the way they felt out there, I thought this is worth it because this is who we are. And I can't put a value on those feelings that we had that week. We'll keep those forever.
You will cherish them forever. And that's a good point, Jennifer. What works for you may not work for everyone else. And I think that's what we're all dealing with right now during COVID. Well, Jennifer, thank you for being willing to tell your story. Thank you for being so raw and opening up your emotions, because there are emotions that all of us are dealing with right now.
Thanks a lot, Ty.
Jennifer Scheich, A Conflicted Mom's Take on Showing Livestock During COVID. It's a must read. You can read that on porkbusiness.com. All right. Wraps up today's show. Davis, this afternoon, Ted Seifert filling in for Chip Flory, and then tomorrow morning on AgriTalk, I believe we have the free-for-all with Mr. John Harris.
That's a big